Welcome back, everybody. I am Cass Piancy, and I am here, as usual, with Bennett Tomlin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well today.
Good. I am not. I just got my second dose of the vaccine, and I'm feeling a little bit shitty today, but that's okay. It's going to be an interesting topic of choice. We are discussing Coinbase's decision to branch into media and fact-checking. Bennett, if you could go ahead and start this out, kind of explain what they've announced so far.
Sure. So there was some reporting last week suggesting that Coinbase was looking to hire some new content directors to help them produce content, along with some kind of editor, someone with a lot of experience in newsrooms and stuff like that. Along with this, we've seen Coinbase rebrand a bunch of their previous blog posts as now fact checks. And so it seems, from where we're saying, that Coinbase is refocusing on their media arm and is also really trying to expand off into fact-checking.
We'll go ahead and give some examples of their current fun facts on their website. But let's kind of get an idea of where you think this is probably leading in terms of what their ultimately what their goal is. Because I think there's some worry amongst journalists that this is big tech business trying to fight real news with their news.
I think there's a lot of legitimate fear in that. It seemed like the editor position they were hiring for was going to be reporting directly to their marketing team, which immediately provokes concerns about editorial independence and the type of material that's going to be produced. Because it seems to me that there's going to be some news in the crypto world that is not going to align with Coinbase's marketing goals. Then, besides that, having Coinbase as this kind of arbiter of facts really results in them being more providing acceptable cover, providing narratives to make it easier for people to ignore legitimate criticism, legitimate skepticism, and things like that surrounding cryptocurrency.
Just from what I think this could be in the most optimistic perspective, even as someone working alongside great journalists, I think that at best, this is going to be used as investor information. And I think that if this is the information that they want to provide to customers and investors on their platform, there's actually a lot to worry about it. Because one of the things I was reading was something along the lines of like tips and tricks for not losing money trading. And it was like, avoid FOMO and FUD. And it was just, this is embarrassing.
Yeah, exactly. It stops being about any legitimate search for truth or useful information. It's just this valueless, sanitized thing that people can point to avoid actually engaging with the material or understanding the material.
Right. Brian Armstrong did a blog post, but I just want to state that I have such an issue with even the very beginning of this blog post, because it says, announcing Coinbase fact check, decentralizing truth in the age of misinformation. And the next sentence is, every tech company should go direct to their audience and become a media company. Now, here's my issue with that. He is talking about decentralizing truth, but all he's talking about actually doing is repeatedly centralizing everyone's version of truth.
Yeah, this isn't really solving any real problem, because all it ends up being is, here's Coinbase's version of this story, and it's not really fact-checking in any meaningful sense, because there's no facts actually being checked. It's finding the facts that conform enough with Coinbase's marketing narrative and using that as some kind of veneer, cover.
Do you think there's any historical precedent for this? Do you think there's some comparison in terms of the age of media and the ages of news that have existed throughout, I don't know, since Gutenberg invented the printing press? What would best compare?
So the closest analogy to me was party presses from the late 18th and early 19th century. And so, yeah, the party presses were printing presses that were funded by various political parties, and they would cover the local news, local happenings, but generally as it relates to the party or as it aligns with the party. They would make sure when elections were coming up to put out like slates of endorsed candidates and stuff like that, always again in line with the goals of the party. And so you're starting to see kind of a similar thing here with Coinbase's expansion into media, where they're not necessarily trying to impartially cover the news. They're trying to create a set of coverage that aligns with their interests. It echoes a little bit too of earlier content marketing things where you'd have various brands and stuff placing pieces on media sites and blogs. But the difference here is that Coinbase is pretending that this is impartial. They're trying to act like this is objective fact, and they're trying to create the veneer of journalism by having some editor or whatever in charge of this. And so I think those trappings are really distinguishing it from a lot of the earlier pieces of content marketing.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I know that there are a lot of issues with the current state of journalism and with the way truth is perceived by the public right now. I think you and I are both fully aware of that. And I'm wondering how this is different than, say, Ted Turner owning CNN or Jeff Bezos owning WAPO or Carlos Slim owning New York Times. These are media moguls who can certainly put the kibosh on a story if they want to, I assume.
Yeah, I think those examples you gave are also quite problematic, if we're being honest with it. Even recently, you saw the Washington Post ran with a line right above their banner that was talking about how Amazon was now in favor of the minimum wage, and they were already had that amount and stuff. So you can certainly seems like Jeff Bezos is influencing Washington Post and stuff like that in other ways. I think our goal as a society should be to minimize examples of that as well, and that is also bad.
Now, our specialty on this is to mostly criticize things and kind of notice what's wrong with them. But if we try to think about this in ways that we would want to see media and journalism move towards a more fair and equitable industry, how would you hope to do that? Because obviously what Coinbase is proposing, what Balaji has proposed, these are people who have never worked a day as reporters in their lives, and they have no idea what it actually means to not answer to a higher authority when it comes to discovering the truth.
Yeah. And I've never worked as a reporter either, so I can't really opine on that. And I don't necessarily know that there's one easy solution to journalism's woes in the modern age. I think there is potential in certain older models, specifically in subscriptions here. So I'm going to return to the New York Times for a second here. Before they instituted their online paywall, if you looked at their website, you would see that the headlines of their articles and the quality of their articles were often much more clickbaity because they made their money on serving ads on those pages and things like that. What has actually helped the New York Times both improve their financial situation over the last few years, and in my opinion, to reestablish their reporting, was by instituting the paywall, was by trying to push more people into subscriptions and funding it that way. Now, that's obviously not an ideal solution because then there are a large number of people who get cut off from that news, but it at least seems better structured for many journalism entities than what we've seen now. Direct funding by the institutions who benefit from the coverage certainly does not seem like a solution.
It's pretty easy to feel pessimistic and sad about the state of journalism. But I have been thinking about it a lot recently, and I understand there's still issues with like Substack and all these other places where people are able to earn an income and you're able to more or less give that money directly to, as opposed to me paying for CoinDesk in a hypothetical world where they're charging fees for CoinDesk. Instead of me paying for CoinDesk, I just would pay Nick to be a good journalist. That to me is like an optimistic outlook for the state of journalism, because it means that the journalists who do the best work and the researchers that do the best work will get public support, even if they're chasing down stories that are maybe controversial.
I certainly think there's potential in those models, and I like them for a lot of reasons. Like what you're saying, is it can provide a sustainable, regular source of income to people that is not necessarily dependent on them chasing the most immediate story. It can allow them time to research and to find these things and to cover them well. I worry a little bit with things like Substack is that by reducing the writer to like the sole component in these things, eliminating any editorial oversight, fact-checking, and things like that can sometimes have negative effects. But whenever I like actually pause and probe that thought a little bit deeper, I realize that many local newspapers and many existing newspapers have given up on most of that stuff already years ago. They have a couple of local reporters who cover local things, the same beats they've been covering for years, and then they run everything else just directly off the Associated Press or whatever, right?
They have to do that to a certain degree, mm-hmm. right? Like if yeah. some people will, but most people are not going to be subscribed to Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and Washington Post. And mm-hmm. not only could they not afford it, but the idea that you would be scanning 18 different newspapers every day is obscene.
Yeah, but even the New York Times recently either severely cut back or eliminated like a whole bunch of their copy editors. And like a lot of these papers don't have copy editors, don't have fact checkers. At best, the only other person reading your article is the editor. And so like, I sometimes worry that my objections to things like Substack are founded in trying to save things that have not existed for a while.
I disagree only because I think any good journalist or researcher knows that there's a lot of things you need to get really good research out without, say, getting the pantsuit off of you or having death threats or whatever it may be. You need a legal team. You need a staff of like 5 or 10 people at a bare minimum. So again, my hope isn't that I just would one day be able to pay Nick or Ben Munster or something, be like, here's 10 bucks a month. Like, you're doing a great job. It would be that my 10 bucks is able to be combined with 100,000 other people's 5 or 10 bucks, and they can afford to have their own newsroom without being
beholden to other interests.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm shockingly optimistic about it. I think you're right. There's a lot of pitfalls with that. There's a lot of pitfalls when it comes to the right people having a voice. I don't know. When people like Zero Hedge have the pulse of the world financial system or something, I just laugh to myself like, oh, something's wrong. But I think we're moving away from that clickbait kind of, it all comes in phases.
I hope we're moving away from that. And I think, yeah, and I think kind of what you're saying is true is there's a concept sometimes in finance and investing that when it comes down to things like this, the only mechanisms at play are either bundling things together or unbundling them. So initially with Substack and with that kind of subscription thing, we saw kind of an unbundling of the newsrooms of the past that allowed these influential journalists and things like that to go independent and probably get closer to their original market value. And now we're kind of seeing a counter dynamic there, where there's groups of people who are working on aggregating different subsects, different subscriptions, and combining them back together. I think you're right. We probably will see a new vision of newsrooms that are largely led by the journalists and led by the writers, funded through subscription and largely not by ad, and who hopefully are smart enough not to take sponsorship dollars that are likely to affect their ability to report. However, I don't think Coinbase starting a new content media arm is at all related to beneficial potential changes in journalism.
I agree. What we're talking about almost is the exact opposite of what Brian Armstrong and Balaji have offered.
Yeah, and just returning to the idea of Coinbase doing fact-checking, we're talking about an exchange that allowed 99% wash trading on one of their pairs and just allegedly never noticed. And they're the ones who are in charge of determining what is true?
It's really absurd, and I think it's very cocky and arrogant of them to think they can do it, which Brian Armstrong excels at. So I shouldn't expect anything besides that at this point. You know, this is another terrible idea from Coinbase. So I think kicking all of those people off your team because they couldn't talk about whatever and simultaneously introducing dumb ideas like this. Yeah, it was like a home run. I think it's awesome.
Brian Armstrong really seems like a guy who understands people.
So that's going to do it for this episode. Just really wanted to quickly go over what is going on with this Coinbase media offering and why we are so against it. I'm looking forward to an episode coming up sometime soon featuring a good friend of ours, an auditor, who's going to do us all a favor and explain the difference between attestations and audits. So talk to you guys soon. Bye.